The good news is this, is that you made it. You made it in a six-week series on finances. And you're probably thinking, well, you're the one that chose it. You're right, I did. But you made it too. We went on a journey together, 6 weeks, 40 days, you made it, of faith and finances. And I can only imagine many of you are thinking, when are we going to get past finances? When can we move on to something else? It starts next week. But you did it. We are here. Thank you for being on this journey. And my prayer is that God has done a work in you. My prayer is not so much maybe on the financial level, yes, but more deeply God has worked in you and it will come out in your financial life. And so that's my prayer. But today's message is titled, God's Ways Are Best. God's Ways Are Best, titled today's message. And I want to start off by asking this question. Have you ever had that friend who's talked a lot about getting in shape and working out, but then never actually does it? And maybe awkwardly you're sitting there thinking, it's not just a friend, that sounds like me, right? That sounds like me, your pastor up here, in that for a couple, I think it's a couple years now, I've been talking about running. I lift weights pretty consistently, and I try and walk about 3 miles a day, but my wife has made some comments last year, you need to implement some more cardio into your life, i.e. you need to be in a lot better shape, honey. That's what she's saying. And so I have two friends who are big runners who are running almost daily. And every 6 months or every 3 months, I always say to them, hey, guys, I'm so excited. I'm going to get running really soon here. They send me like a Nike fitness app that I can, you know, use and we can share our stuff together. And after every 3 months, guess what? I'm not running. Next 3 months, I can't wait, guys. It's going to be so awesome. And I'm not running. It's been 2 years. I'm still not running. But you can hold me accountable to be running more, all right? Have you ever been there? You want to do something, and it went from an idea or a concept or a lot of talk, but it never got translated into something actionable, right? We've all been there in our lives. And in this series, what I want to do today, and maybe you've been wondering this, is for 5 weeks, we've been diving into a lot of heavy content around not just so much finances, but more heart-level stuff, right? More our hearts and following Jesus and discipleship, and rightly so. But you might have been asking, when are you going to tell us like practical things? I mean, what about saving and spending and debt and all those things? Well, your day has arrived. This last sermon is kind of at the end of our series is that. What does this look like? What are actionable things we can be doing practically in our lives to be fulfilling what we've been talking about for 5 weeks? And so that's what we're going to dive into today. But the way we're going to do it is this. We're going to be looking in the book of Proverbs. And in the book of Proverbs, if you're not familiar, Proverbs was written by Solomon. Most scholars agree on that. And to his sons. And it's often referred to as a wisdom book in the Bible, mainly because it's all these kind of pithy nugget wisdom statements that Solomon gives around life. Well, what's interesting is that there was a journalist named Tim Maher, and Tim Maher wrote for Forbes magazine. Forbes magazine is a financial magazine, and Tim Maher was not a Christian, and a friend of his said, hey, you should read the book of Proverbs in the Bible just for wisdom, just looking at wisdom and how to live your life. And he thought, sure, you know, all right. So he read the book of Proverbs, and he walked away, and spoiler, he was shocked. And he said, I could not believe the amount of good, wise things there is in this book. It was written 3,000 years ago, and it's so relevant for today. But what stuck out to him the most out of it was the financial wisdom. And he made the comment, he said, even if you're not a Christian or you don't even believe in God, it doesn't really matter. If you simply just followed the financial wisdom in the book of Proverbs, you would most likely be in a pretty good place. Not even believing in God and being a Christian, just following the financial wisdom of Proverbs, you would be most likely in a pretty good place. He noted in his reading of it that there's 31 chapters in Proverbs. There is 130 references to financial things. 130. Everything from money to wealth to riches to prosperity to debt to generosity to poverty to hard work to diligence and more. The book of Proverbs is littered and littered with financial wisdom. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to dive into Proverbs today and look at a number of practical things we can be doing as a church and people to follow Jesus in our finances. But before we do that, I want to say four caveats or four things to remember before we dive in. And here they are very quickly. Number one is this. This is so important to hear about Proverbs. You have to get this right, okay? the book of Proverbs, these are principles, they're not promises. You got to be really careful with this. If you read the book of Proverbs, there's a lot of statements that are like, if you do this, this will happen. And it's very easy to walk away and go, well, I'm being diligent, but it says I'll be wealthy and I'm not. So what's happening? So these are principles, not promises, okay? All right, we got to make sure we say that. Number two, important to remember as we talk about this, we did a sermon 3 weeks ago, God owns everything. The finances I have in my life right now are not mine. They are on loan from God for an extended period of time, and I am a steward of it. So the question really is not so much, how should I be handling my money? It's how should I be handling God's money? How should I be a steward of what God has given me? And what should I do with that? So that's number two. Number three is this, is Proverbs, one of the things it talks a lot about is generosity and giving. If you were here last Sunday, we did a whole sermon on that. So I'm not going to dive into that so much today. But suffice to say this, as we get into these financial principles, what I said last week, and that one of the main takeaways was this, we give as the first thing in the month. That when we have our resources that God provides for us, the very first thing we do is give, then we do everything else. Then we budget, then we save, then we do everything else. The first thing we do is give. And the three C's we use at Arbor Heights is we give cheerfully, consistently, and costly. Those are our three C's we use when we talk about giving. Here's the fourth thing. And I just want to caveat again, there's always going to be unique scenarios. So as I give these principles today, I can only imagine some of you are like, well, that's not really 100% accurate. I mean, my circumstances are this, or this is going on in my home. There's no way to cover all of our unique circumstances. So just a caveat for that. There might be unique things that don't work exactly, okay? All right, here's our first one. The first one is this, is know your flock. Know your flock. Here's Proverbs 27:23. I love this verse. Be sure you know the condition of your flocks. Give careful attention to your herds. Now, this was an agrarian society, of course, as we're hearing this 3,000 years ago. And so these are shepherds and herdsmen. But the advice that Solomon is giving is, listen, you need to take careful attention and detail to your flocks and how they are doing. You need to know how every sheep in your pasture is doing. You need to know the status of them and be monitoring that and checking in on that. Now, sheep for these people would have been their livelihood. Essentially, that would be their income or finances. Selling the sheep, the wool from the sheep, all of that. So here's maybe the way we can translate it for us today. Be sure you know the condition of your money. Give careful attention to your checking, savings, debt, investments, and more. Careful attention to that, right? Here's a question to consider this morning. Do you know where every dollar coming into your house goes today? Every dollar that comes into your home, whatever form it takes and how it comes in, do you know where every dollar goes? If you don't know where every dollar goes, you have a problem. One of the things as you think about this, and you're probably wondering, okay, how would you describe it? Stewarding my finances well begins with having a budget. That's a number one thing to start, and this is the key point to start with to build everything else. Stewarding my finances well starts with a budget. A budget is a way for me to know the condition of my financial flock. I have to be tracking what's coming into my home, and I have to have a plan for where it is going. Many of you know Dave Ramsey, a very common guy, financial advice. And I think he has some good things to say. I think there's some things that are not as good, different perspectives on him. But I do like one of the things he said was this, quote, give every dollar a purpose. Give every dollar in your home a purpose. Every dollar in your home should be going somewhere. It should have some direction it is going and being accounted for. What a budget does, a budget allows you to control your money rather than your money controlling you. If you don't have a budget, your money controls you. You become a slave of your money. And you're spending it, and you don't know the condition of your financial flock, and so things happen and problems happen. But when you have a budget, you're telling your money where to go and what to do. So having that, and you know, a side note, in this financial series, I've had so many of you tell me different things God's been working your life on. And it's been so encouraging. And one of the ones for my wife and I actually has been this very one. We've had a budget our whole entire marriage, but with the reality of life, there's been years we've done well with that budget and years we've not paid much attention to that budget. And after this financial series in week two, my wife and I sat down at our home one afternoon and said, listen, we got to get back on top of our budget and monitoring it. So my wife and I did in January, middle of January. Now we're getting back to every Saturday morning. We meet for 30 minutes, pull out the computer, our spreadsheet. We run through the budget of the month. We look at where the last week has gone. And this last month, for example, one area in our budget was way higher than we had thought. And so we've had to make corrections this month. And so that's what the budget allows you to do. It allows you to keep control of your money. I want to address this too. Sometimes people think this. A budget doesn't limit your spending. It allows you to spend the right way. I think at times we hear the word budget and people start to cringe and go, oh, but I want to do what I want to do and I want to buy the things I want to buy and I want to live the way I want to live and do those kind of things. A budget doesn't limit you. A budget allows you to spend the right way. It allows you to tell the money where to be going. So just getting even more practical, well, how do I do this? What does this look like? And I would say this. Number one is this. Think of essentials first. What are the core essentials or, quote, needs you have? Housing, clothing, insurance, medical, all those kinds of things. That's the first part of the budget, the number one thing. Second part in your budget, repaying debt. If you have debt, we'll talk about this a little bit later, that should be number two. School loans, car loans, whatever kind of loans you have, putting those down and saying, okay, we have to figure out a way to begin to attack the debt we have in our home. Number three would be saving. Saving for short-term emergency funds, saving for longer-term things, saving for retirement, begin to save. And then number four would be spending. And those are in order. Essentials, repaying debt, saving, and then moving to spending. Spending is not first in your budget, or it should not be first in your budget. The number one thing should be my needs, and then moving to there. So we have to know the condition of our sheep, our flock. Here's the second one. Keep up with Jesus, not the Joneses. Keep up with Jesus, not the Joneses. Another question for you, this. Do you live below your means? Do you live below the money that you're bringing in? Stats show here in America, 26% of Americans spend more than they earn. 25% spend more than they earn. And then that's more than they earn. The vast majority earn at the level of their income. Very few people live below. Our finances ought to be the exact same as how the Bible teaches about how to use our time. The use of your time is this. It's unwise in your week to just pack it so full you never have margin. That's a really unwise way to live. A much wiser way to live, and how the Bible calls us in Proverbs to live, is margin in my time. In my week, there should be margin for family, for appropriate self-care, and other things. In the same way, with my finances, I have to live below what I bring in. And this is number two, because everything else hinges on that, right? If I don't live below and there's no extra income, how will I ever save? How will I pay off debt? How will I look long term? I won't be able to do any of those things if there's no gap, if there's no margin. So I need to evaluate my income and look at how I can live below. I love this verse in Proverbs 21:20. The wise store up choice food and olive oil, but the fool gulps theirs down. Is that a great picture? The wise person brings things and has things, and wisely they think, hey, listen, I can't consume everything. There needs to be margin. I'll live below. I'll save. I'll do these things. The foolish person says, gulps it all down. Just buys right into consumerism, doesn't think long term, and immediately uses those things. I want to give you two statements that are helpful with this. And again, I understand there's different, lots of different pieces with this one, but just two things to note. Another kind of Dave Ramsey quote I thought was helpful. He said this, three words, act your wage. Act your wage. I love that one. Act your wage, i.e. live within your financial means. Whatever income you have is what God has provided for you. Doesn't mean we shouldn't seek more, but there's a level of contentment with that. And to live within that, don't try and live at a lifestyle or income that you're not bringing in. Act your wage. Another one is to control lifestyle inflation. Control lifestyle inflation. You know what I mean by this, right? We all know this. Let's just be honest. You get a little bit of a raise. You get a little bit of extra money. And slowly, vacations get a tad bit nicer. cars get a tad bit nicer, restaurants get a tad bit nicer, right? I mean, we've all been there, right? And again, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with doing some things nicer. But to be careful with that, to be careful and recognize to be where my lifestyle is going and not making sure I'm getting out of my income or beyond my income, but having an appropriate place for it. Okay, that's the second one. Keep up with Jesus, not the Joneses. Number three is this, EEA. Yes, you heard me say that correctly. EEA, what is it? I'll tell you in a minute. Be patient. Let me read you a number of Proverbs. And this one actually is technically not maybe a financial wisdom, but Proverbs talks about it a lot as a direct connection to financial wisdom. Here's a number of Proverbs, 22:29. Do you see someone skilled in their work? They will serve before kings. They will not serve before officials of low rank. Proverbs 21:5, the plans of the diligent lead to profit, as surely as haste leads to poverty. Proverbs 14:23, all hard work brings a profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty. Proverbs 10:4, lazy hands make for poverty, but diligent hands bring wealth. You guys notice a theme in those verses? Probably pretty clear, right? One of the hallmarks, I think, of a believer, and one of the hallmarks oftentimes of producing financial stability is someone who is working very diligently and very hard. Not lazy, not making excuses, not blaming other people, but is putting in hard work for their job. And I would say it maybe this way, and again, these are principles, not promises, but I would say it maybe this way. A common mark of those with financial stability is the pursuit of excellence. A common mark of those with financial stability is the pursuit of excellence. Now let me explain EEA. So I've got a friend, and he's said this acronym to me all through life. We've been friends for a long time. And I say EEA. And in fact, I was over at his home recently, and he had a poster up on the wall framed that said EEA. And what EEA stands for is exceed expectations always. Exceed expectations always. Whatever is expected of you in your job, always exceed it. Whatever is expected of you in any role you are in, whatever that role might be, volunteer or paid or part-time, whatever that role is for you, always exceed expectations. I've shared this story before, but it's always, I think last year, but whenever I think of this idea of EEA, I always think of this guy. I shared before, last year I was driving down behind the hill here, down the ferry dock. And as I pass by, there's always a traffic cop out in front. And whenever the cars are coming out, right, there's a traffic cop who's directing people. You've probably seen that many times down there. And I'm down there all the time. And so I noticed there was about four different people they had there. Four different employees were there directing traffic. And I happen to notice oftentimes, because you would get stopped down there, you know, they would like pause you and you got to wait, so I'd watch. And three of the four did their job. They would direct people, turn here, right, like people, hey, stop, people are coming across the crosswalk, right, they would do their job. This one guy, though, was unbelievable. I pulled up there one time and stopped, and he wasn't just doing the job. It was like almost the president of the United States was coming off the ferry. This guy had the most energy you've ever seen. He was enthusiastic like you've never seen in your life. I mean, cars are coming, and he's like down in position. He's directing people. You can tell he's so fired up. And then when pedestrians would come, he would pause them, and he'd tell the pedestrians, and I heard him. I rolled down my window, and I heard him yelling out, "Have a great day. Have a great day. I hope your day's awesome. Have an awesome day." He's encouraging people. He is so fired up. And so I drove by one day, and I rolled down my window as I was going kind of slow, and he was like, "Hey," and I said, "Listen, man, you do such a great job. I'm so impressed out here." And he was like, "Okay," and he reaches over, high-fives me. We high-five right there in the road. It was so awesome. Guys, like, this guy, this guy's kind of weird. Well, the story gets weirder. So I go home, I tell my family about it. My family's like, "That's pretty cool, Dad," but they're also like, "Why do you have to be so weird with people? You know, just be normal. Just be normal." And I'm like, "I'm not normal." And so a month or two later, I saw him again. Every time I drove by, honestly, I would get so excited. And I was like, "This guy is EEAing every day." And so one day I drove by and I had a couple minutes to spare. And I said, "That's it." And I pull over in the parking lot, the ferry terminal. And I get out of my car, and the cars had finally kind of passed, and so he was out there. And I walked towards him, and his hands were here, but when I got close, I could tell his hands kind of went here, like towards his gun and his taser, like, what's this guy going to do? And I thought when we shook hands, we were friends. I was like, hey, it's me. And he looks at me kind of like, what? And then he's like, oh, that's right. He comes over, we high five again like this. I high five, I bring him in really tight, like I bring him in right here to my face. And I said, what's your name? And he says, Eric. And I said, Eric, listen, I said, every day I come down here and I see you. And I said, I am so impressed with you. You do your job with energy. You do it with excitement. People who come by, I see you encouraging them. I said, it's a highlight, man, to see you and what you do down here in this role. And I said, thank you for what you do. And the look on his face was half excitement and half like, get away from me. No, he's like, thank you so much for saying that. Now I'm like, keep up the great work, Eric. You're doing awesome, man. And all right, and then he headed back. Again, I told my family, and my family again was like, what is wrong with you? No one does that. Just let him do his job. But I thought to myself this, what if every Christian was like Eric? What if every Christian in your workplace was like Eric? I think it would transform the places where we work. If we were there and the only thing we thought every day was EEA, I will exceed expectations always. I will be someone totally different than what everyone sees around me. And I just want to say, if you're here, and maybe you're hearing this and you're wondering to yourself, you know what, that sounds great, John, but you know, you don't know where I work. You don't know the challenges in my work. You don't know my salary. You don't know my boss. You don't know all these kinds of things. But I want you to hear this, and I see this with grace. EEA has nothing to do with my boss, where I work, my salary, or anything else. It has everything to do with my relationship with Jesus Christ. And here's why. Two verses. 1 Corinthians 10:31. So whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, Arbor Heights, do it all for the glory of God. Colossians 3:23, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not human masters. Every single thing I'm doing in my workplace is not for anybody around me. It's not for my company. It's not for my boss, or it's not for a paycheck. It's for Jesus. I work for one boss and one boss alone. And when I end my life, I will stand before one boss and one boss alone, and that is Jesus. So that's why our work is to be done EEA, not for anybody else, but for Christ. I want to exceed expectations always for him because he's worth it. He's worth all my heart with that. And so Solomon connects those two. Notice that right in all those verses I read? That again, not always, but oftentimes, those who are in a financially stable place is oftentimes the result of, not always, often the result of pursuing excellence. All work done with excellence. And whatever role God has put them in. Okay, that's the third one. Number four is this, become an ant. Yes, you heard that right. Become an ant. Proverbs 6:6-8 says this, go to the ant, you sluggard, consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler, yet it stores its provisions in the summer and gathers its food at the harvest. So Solomon goes out, and Solomon literally watches ants. He sits by an ant hill and just observes ants. And he happens to notice this thing about ants, that they actually, without even a commander to tell them to do things, they think and realize, you know what? There's going to be a season where I won't be able to gather much. I'll gather more now. I.e., they save. They think about the future. They think about what they have to be saving towards. And Solomon observes that and calls us to be the exact same way. And so the question I want to ask there is, am I setting aside a portion of my finances each month for the future? Am I looking ahead towards the future? Do I have goals for the future? And what those goals are? And then am I putting small amounts of money aside each month to build towards those goals? Again, that verse in Proverbs 21:20, the wise store up choice food and olive oil, but the fool gulps theirs down. They don't think about the long term. They don't think about the future. And so are you setting aside a small portion each month to do that? And just again, very practically, there's short-term, mid-term, and long-term. Short-term would be emergency funds. Do you have an emergency fund? that if things go south tomorrow, do you have some finances to help with that, right? Are you building up? Most financial advisors will recommend 3 to 6 months of emergency savings. Now, I know a lot of us maybe are not at that place, and my wife and I were not there for a long time, but over the years, just kept putting small amounts away so you can build up to that place. 3 to 6 months of emergency savings if there was a job loss or something of that nature. Then midterm saving would be things like saving for a car, saving for a down payment for a home, saving for a financial goal that we have, right? And begin to save for those things. And then long-term is retirement or long-term investing, 20, 30 years down the road. And the thing about that, remember, it's so important. It's not the amount of money, it's time. It's time. Proverbs 13:11 says this, dishonest money dwindles away, but whoever gathers money little by little makes it grow. Whoever gathers money little by little makes it grow. Here's the formula. A little bit of money plus a lot of time equals a lot of money. And let me just explain very quickly. I came out of a finance background. That's my degree in college. I worked for a financial firm for a couple years. This is very near and dear to my heart. And I remember a stat thrown around a lot of times. If you're 25 years old, you put only $100 a month away at 25 for 40 years to 65. With the stock market returns over history, you'd have $1.1 million. $100 a month, 25 to 45, you'd have $1.1 million. You know, one of the things that you might be wondering, though, and I think it's important to answer right now is, hey, you know, okay, I hear you encouraging us to store up for things, but it's kind of awkward because I thought in the New Testament, in the book of Luke, for example, 16, Jesus condemns a man who is storing up money. There's a parable in there about a guy who put a bunch of money in his barns and stored up a ton of money. And so, wait a minute, should we store up money or not be storing up money, right? And I would say, I think what Jesus is attacking or condemning in the New Testament is this idea where I store up money beyond my needs and beyond reasonable, appropriate things for my future, and I'm storing up money ultimately for selfish reasons, for me to live the most comfortable life possible. And it's important to hear, as followers of Jesus, our goal in life is not to live the most comfortable life possible. Our goal in life is to run hard after Jesus. Now, it's not wrong, again, to have an income to support things, but when it gets to a point of it's well beyond what I need or it's way beyond excess, then that's a different question. Jesus wants us to store up appropriately. And I just want to say, too, if you're in that place here at Arbor Heights financially where you are well beyond needs, and to think about, you know, we're at a place that we don't really need that, you know, are there opportunities then for you to consider blessing others? Who are other people that I can bless? So I can move beyond my own temporary things and look at other people and what they have as needs. And for one example would be last week in the bulletin, we put our AHCC Cares Fund. That's a fund in our church that goes to people who are in a financial need in our church. That could be a great place. There's lots of other ones, but that's a place to consider. Okay, here's number 5. Avoid the debt monster. Avoid the debt monster, right? Proverbs is full of counsel. That's Proverbs 22:26-27, do not be one who shakes hands in pledge or puts up security for debts. If you lack the means to pay, your very bed will be snatched from under you. In our culture, I think for many of us, it's hard to avoid debt. Obviously, housing debt, but even beyond that, it's really difficult to avoid debt. But we should be very careful about the debt that we're getting into and then also paying off that debt as quickly as we can. So thinking about that, you might have heard the snowball method. Maybe some of you heard of that strategy before. That's where the lowest amount of debt you have to begin to pay that off first. That builds confidence to pay off further debt down the road. But as Christians, we ought to be people that are being very leery and careful of getting into debt. Here's the last one. Number 6 is ask for help. Ask for help. Proverbs says this, 15:22, plans fail for lack of counsel, but with many advisors, they succeed. And Proverbs 20:18, plans are established by seeking advice. If today you're here and you've got questions or you don't know what to do with some financial decisions, ask for help. Ask for help. I'll never forget, I think it was 2 years ago, maybe a little over that. We have a financial advisor who's helped us for a long time. And the market, this is a couple years ago, the market had a horrible month. And I mean, lost a lot of money. It was dropping and dropping and dropping. And I called up my financial advisor and I was like, hey, listen, do we need to start pulling money out? I'm getting really scared and we're losing a lot of money. And I'm so thankful for him. And he said, John, two things. Number one, there's an app on my phone that has all of our balances. He said, are you checking that every day? And I said, yes. And he said, stop. Stop right now. Do not do that. You don't need the money now. It's long-term money. Quit doing that. And he said, number two, don't worry. It's the stock market. You don't need the money for another 25 years. There'll be a lot of ups and downs. Hang in there and just let it go. And I'm so thankful for his advice because we did. And fast forward 2 years later, and things are in a much better place than they were 2 years ago. We have a lot of people in our church who are involved in the financial industry. We have a lot of people in our church who have done very well with finances. They'd be happy to meet with you and talk about things with finances. Ask for help. Don't do this alone. And I want to say last quick thing is on our website, just a very practical thing, on our website, on our give page, we have something called Faith in Finances. And on that page, there's four categories for different age groups. There's starting out, if it's in your, you're in your 20s. There's getting established, if you're in your 30s and 40s. There's building impact, if you're in your 50s and 60s. And there's leaving a legacy, if you're 65 plus. In each of those areas on our website, there's all kinds of tools and resources and all kinds of things for you to get help. And if you want to, let me know. I'm glad to help you with that to begin stewarding what God has given you for his glory. Let's pray together. Lord God, thank you so much for the book of Proverbs. Thank you for the financial wisdom that you give us, God. And Lord, help us to take these 5 weeks of 6 weeks of things you've been putting on our heart, God, and help us to translate it into action. Let us not just be people who end the 5 weeks and talk about things or have good intentions or dreams and hopes, but it never makes its way into our actual wallets or our checking accounts or our savings or our investments, Lord. Help us to translate this into action. And God, this week, maybe we need to be praying, Lord, what's the one or two things you want me to do? What's the one or two changes that maybe my spouse and I have to do or I need to do? God, we just pray for your help. We know you love us so much and you have great things you want to do in our lives. Thank you for your faithfulness every single day. In your name, Jesus, amen. Let's stand together and